Hi there, it's Vicky with the Talking Information Center. It is August 18th, 2026, and today I'll be reading Newsmax. Our first article is entitled, Trump's Iran Strategy Could Open Pacific Security Gap, Some Experts Say. President Donald Trump's decision to maintain a major U.S. military presence in the Middle East could create a temporary security gap in the Western Pacific as the aircraft carrier USS George Washington heads from Japan to the Middle East to relieve the USS Abraham Lincoln. Axios reported Monday that the George Washington's deployment is expected to leave the United States without an aircraft carrier in the Western Pacific at a time when China and other U.S. adversaries in the region are increasing their military activity. Temporary gaps in carrier coverage are not unprecedented, but the move highlights the competing demands placed on the U.S. military by the war with Iran and America's longstanding security commitments in the Indo-Pacific. Mark Kansian, a retired Marine colonel and senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, told Axios that China could use the opening to increase its presence around U.S. allies, such as Taiwan and Japan, although he said a full-scale Chinese invasion was unlikely. The Western Pacific is particularly important to U.S. national security, with the region hosting at least 66 significant defense sites, according to a Congressional Research Service report cited by Axios. Taiwan is also a major producer of advanced semiconductors that are critical to the global technology industry and the development of artificial intelligence. The immediate reason for the carrier rotation is the unusually long deployment of the Lincoln, which has been operating in the Middle East after being redirected from the Indo-Pacific as the conflict with Iran escalated. The Associated Press reported that the Lincoln's prolonged deployment has prompted concerns about the physical and mental well-being of its roughly 5,000 sailors and Marines. Stars and Stripes has also reported concerns from sailors and military families about conditions aboard the carrier, including allegations involving food, water, mail, and other supplies. Those reports have fueled questions about whether the decision to move the George Washington from the Pacific is also intended to give the Lincoln and its crew relief after an unusually demanding deployment. The Navy and Trump administration, however, have pushed back against reports portraying conditions aboard the Lincoln as broadly deteriorating. President Donald Trump dismissed reports about poor conditions aboard the carrier Monday, calling them fake and saying the ship was beautifully maintained, according to the Associated Press. The administration's position is that the George Washington's movement represents a military rotation and demonstrates the Navy's ability to shift forces where they are needed, rather than evidence that the fleet is overstretched. The carrier movement nonetheless highlights the pressure that sustained operations against Iran are placing on a Navy with a relatively small number of aircraft carriers. The Navy has 11 aircraft carriers, a fleet that allows two carriers to remain continuously deployed under normal circumstances without placing excessive strain on crews, Brian Clark, a former submariner and senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, told Axios. If two carriers are required for extended operations in the Middle East, Clark said, there could be periods lasting months in which no U.S. aircraft carrier is present in the Pacific. Carriers also require significant maintenance following lengthy deployments, meaning an extended Middle East commitment could continue to affect carrier availability even after the immediately conflict has eased. Clark told Axios that the 11-carrier fleet remains sufficient for U.S. defense, but only if deployments are managed carefully. The carrier movement comes as the Trump administration is also substantially reducing routine U.S.-South Korean military exercises, according to Axios. While Trump prepares, for a potential summit with Chinese President Xi Jinping. The combination of reduced exercises and the potential absence of an American carrier could give Beijing an opportunity to portray the United States as less committed to its Asian allies. If you are Taiwan or the Philippines or Japan, you're looking at this and saying the U.S. is basically not here, and the Chinese are, Clark told Axios. Clark said China would not necessarily need to launch a war to take advantage of such a situation, arguing that Beijing could instead try to convince regional governments that Washington would not be there for them in a crisis. The White House rejected that broader interpretation. The United States military maintains the force posture necessary to achieve any desired objective set by the commander-in-chief, White House spokeswoman Anna Kelly told Axios. Kelly added that Operation Epic Fury demonstrated that America's military might is stronger than it's ever been. The administration's argument is that the Navy's ability to shift major forces between theater demonstrates flexibility and military strength, while critics warn that repeated deployments between the Middle East and Pacific could eventually stretch the fleet and its crews beyond sustainable limits. For now, the George Washington's departure could create a temporary gap in U.S. carrier coverage in the Western Pacific, but whether that develops into a meaningful security vulnerability will depend on how long the carrier remains in the Middle East and how the Navy manages its remaining forces. Admiral Mullen, Truth on USS Lincoln Issues in the Middle, by Charlie McCarthy. The truth about reported mental health concerns among service members on board the USS Abraham Lincoln is likely somewhere in the middle, according to a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Retired Admiral Mike Mullen, who led the Joint Chiefs from 2007 to 2011, told ABC's This Week on Sunday that the aircraft carrier's extraordinarily long deployment has been difficult, while also cautioning against accepting some of the more alarming reports about conditions aboard the ship. "I was certainly, from what I could see in the news reports, concerned that the conditions on the ship were of great concern," Mullen said. "And I also believe the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle." The Lincoln has been deployed since November 21st and has spent more than 260 days at sea supporting U.S. operations against Iran, according to The Hill. Families have raised concern about sailors' mental health, food, water, communications, and exhaustion. But U.S. Central Command has pushed back against some reports, calling claims of multiple deaths aboard the carrier false. CENTCOM said no service members have died during the deployment, and that one sailor who went overboard on August 3rd was quickly recovered. The Navy has said it has not observed an increase in suicidal ideations or attempts. Mullen said Admiral Brad Cooper, commander of CENTCOM, visited the Lincoln and reported that many problems occurred earlier in the deployment and had been addressed. "These are morale issues on a ship, which you really have to focus on," Mullen said, while stressing that the crew has performed exceptionally under combat conditions. The Lincoln's deployment was complicated by Iranian attacks that made traditional port stops in Bahrain, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates unsafe, forcing the Navy to adapt and keep the carrier at sea, Mullen said. The Navy announced the Lincoln will return to San Diego as part of a planned rotation, with the USS George Washington heading to the region as its replacement. President Donald Trump on Friday dismissed suggestions that the deployment had lasted too long, saying it was not nearly long enough. War Secretary Pete Hegseth also said conditions aboard the Lincoln have been completely misrepresented. Mullen nevertheless warned that excessively long deployments can damage future military readiness. "These ships, these people, these families," Mullen said, "need to basically come back, figure out how to get ready for the next post, but it takes time to do that." Erdogan urges Trump to pursue talks with Iran, offers support. Turkish President Recep Erdogan urged President Donald Trump in a phone call to pursue talks with Iran to de-escalate tensions between the two countries and offered Ankara's support for peace efforts, the Turkish presidency said on Tuesday. Turkey, which has NATO's second largest army and borders Iran, has repeatedly called for an end to the war. It has maintained close contact with the United States, Iran, and mediators such as Pakistan and Qatar, while also acting as intermediary between the parties. Erdogan stated that it is of great importance to make the utmost of diplomacy regarding the tensions between Iran and the United States, that we hope the talks will continue, and that Turkey will continue to support peace efforts, the presidency said in a statement. The call comes after a senior Iranian official told Reuters earlier on Monday that Iran would shift to a fully offensive military posture because efforts to negotiate a permanent end to the war have stalled as Washington ruled out extending a temporary ceasefire agreement. Progress toward a resumption of oil tanker traffic through the Strait of Hormuz has also stalled. Turkey has criticized the U.S. and Israeli assault on Iran, while also condemning the Iranian attacks on Gulf states and calling for the reopening of the strategic strait. On Monday, Turkey's foreign minister discussed the strait's reopening and the continuation of the ceasefire with his Iranian counterpart. The presidency added that Erdogan and Trump have also discussed bilateral ties, the war in Gaza, and a defense pact signed between Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Pakistan, adding that the Turkish leader praised the accord as a sign of a strong stance for regional stability and security. It said Erdogan told Trump that Israel's attacks on Palestinians had increased at a time when the second phase of Trump's Gaza peace plan was supposed to come into effect. The White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the call. Vessel struck in Strait of Hormuz, crew casualty reported, UKMTO says. The United Kingdom Maritime Trade Operations, or UKMTO, received a report on Tuesday that a vessel was struck by an unknown projectile while transiting outbound in the Strait of Hormuz, causing engine room damage and a crew's casualty, with the remaining crew being assisted by the Omani Coast Guard. No environmental impact has been reported, and authorities are investigating, UKMTO said. The incident comes as shipping through the Strait of Hormuz remains severely disrupted, with vessels crossing still in the single digits, down from more than 130 a day before the war. Dems plan Oman war powers push after Trump threat. Congressional Democrats are preparing a new push to constrain President Trump's war powers after he threatened military action against Oman on Monday, escalating tensions with a U.S. ally that has been helping mediate efforts to end the Iran war. Axios' Andrew Solander reported Monday that war power resolutions, while largely symbolic, have become a favored tool amongst Democrats seeking to challenge what they view as an overly aggressive approach to U.S. military power. At this point, we may just need to file war power resolutions for the 192 other countries, Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat of California, told Axios. Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia, announced Monday that he plans to introduce an Oman War Powers resolution when the Senate returns to session next month. Kaine pointed to the longstanding U.S.-Oman relationship, noting that the two countries have a strong diplomatic relationship and a free trade agreement, plus argued that Trump's threats risk benefiting U.S. adversaries, such as Russia and China. Kaine said he hopes to attract Republican support for the resolution and use Congress's war powers to check what he described as a president who is blindly stumbling and power drunk. The Oman effort would be the latest chapter in a months-long Democratic campaign to use war power resolutions to constrain Trump's military campaign against Iran, an effort that has repeatedly fallen short, even as Democrats have managed to win votes in both chambers. The House rejected Democratic-led Iran war power measures three times before one passed. On June 23rd, the Senate joined the House in passing a war powers resolution by a 50-48 vote, marking the first time the chamber approved such a measure against Trump's Iran campaign. The vote was nevertheless largely symbolic and did not result in a lasting restriction on the president's military authority. The planned Oman resolution is unlikely to have much practical effect unless Democrats can overcome the same political obstacles that have stymied earlier efforts. Democrats have repeatedly succeeded in forcing votes and, at times, attracting Republican support, but they have not been able to turn those votes into a durable restriction on Trump's military authority. Oman has played a significant diplomatic role in the conflict between Washington and Tehran and has been involved in efforts to broker an end to the war. The immediate dispute centers on the Strait of Hormuz, the strategic waterway connecting the Persian Gulf with the Gulf of Oman, which Trump has made a central focus of U.S. policy as the conflict has disrupted shipping. Newsmax reported Monday that Iran and Oman were working on an understanding over a proposed transit route through the Strait of Hormuz and were working toward a joint statement. Trump made the threat against Oman during an interview with Fox News. If Oman gets in the way of reopening the Strait of Hormuz, Trump said the U.S. would bomb the snot out of them. Asked by reporters later Monday whether he was losing patience with Oman, Trump said he did not think the country had behaved very well, but added that the U.S. could deal with Oman very easily. Iran prepares for prolonged war as Khamenei tightens grip at home. Iran's leader is reshaping the country's military and security establishment with veteran hardliners, signaling that Tehran is preparing for a prolonged confrontation with the U.S. while tightening its grip on a restive population at home. The moves, detailed in a New York Times report Monday, come nearly 6 months into the war between Iran and the U.S. and Israel, and as a 60-day deadline for reaching a broader agreement expired Monday without a final deal. The reshuffle suggests Ayatollah Mojaba Khamenei is preparing Iran for a conflict that could continue for an extended period while strengthening the security machinery needed to contain dissent if economic and political pressures triggered renewed unrest, the Times reported. The most prominent appointments include Mohsen Rezai, a veteran commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, as Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, and Hossein Taib, a former IRGC intelligence chief, as head of the Basij Parliamentary Organization. The appointments put longtime military and security figures in charge of institutions responsible for confronting Iran's enemies abroad and controlling potential unrest inside the country. Sina Tusi, an Iran expert at the Center for International Policy, told the Times that the changes represented Khamenei putting his stamp on the national security structure of Iran. Taib's appointment is particularly significant because the Basij has historically played a major role in suppressing protests and monitoring opposition inside Iran. The Times reported that Khamenei instructed Taib to strengthen the Basij's public intelligence network, a move experts interpreted as an expansion of domestic surveillance and repression. The reshuffle, therefore, appears to serve two purposes: preparing Iran's military and security apparatus for a prolonged confrontation abroad, while giving the regime stronger tools to manage the consequences at home. The domestic challenge could become increasingly serious as Iran's economy remains under severe pressure, with the possibility of renewed protests looming. Omar Mamarian, an Iran analyst at Dawn, told the Times that Iranian society increasingly resembles a boiling pot and argued that a confrontational strategy abroad is easier for the leadership to sustain if it believes it can suppress the political consequences at home. The military appointments point in the same direction. Rezai, who commanded the Revolutionary Guard during the Iran-Iraq War, has historically favored continuing military pressure rather than accepting an early settlement, according to the Times. The newspaper reported that other senior posts have also gone to veteran military figures, including new leadership for Iran's armed forces, the Revolutionary Guard, and the Guard's naval forces. The changes come as Tehran and Washington remain locked in a standoff over the Strait of Hormuz and the terms of a potential agreement. Reuters reported Monday that an Iranian official said Tehran would shift from a defensive to a fully offensive posture and could attack if Washington fails to implement an interim agreement within weeks, underscoring how far the negotiations have deteriorated. The 60-day deadline established by the June Memorandum of Understanding expired Monday without the broader agreement the two sides had hoped to reach, according to Reuters and the Associated Press. According to The Times, Iranian hardliners argue that Tehran should retain control of the strategic waterway until a final agreement is reached, preserving an important source of leverage over Washington. Hadi Borhani, a political commentator and professor at the University of Tehran, told The Times that the hardline position has gained strength because Iranian officials view the West as fundamentally untrustworthy. The result is a strategy that does not necessarily rule out diplomacy, but prepares for the possibility that diplomacy will fail. Abdul Rasul Divsalar, an Iran expert at the Catholic University of Milan, told The Times that the appointments reflected Tehran's effort to develop a new deterrent strategy against Washington while still leaving room for negotiations. Tusi told The Times that Iran remains willing to negotiate, but is also prepared for a long conflict rather than accept an incomplete or temporary settlement that could leave the country exposed to renewed U.S. pressure or attack. Nearly 6 months into the war, with the negotiating deadline expired, Iran's leadership is preparing for two fronts, sustaining its ability to confront the U.S., while tightening its security apparatus to withstand pressure and dissent at home. The appointments of veteran military commanders and a longtime intelligence chief suggest that Khamenei is planning for a conflict that may not end quickly and for the domestic consequences that could come with it. Trump weighs cabinet rotation once Levitt departs. By Michael Katz. President Donald Trump is considering whether to use cabinet members to conduct White House press briefings indefinitely once Prince Secretary Caroline Levitt leaves her position at the end of the month. Levitt, whom Trump describes as one of my most trusted aides, announced last week she will step down to spend more time with her family after the birth of her second child. Levitt was on maternity leave from late April through last month, giving birth to her daughter, Viviana, in May. During her absence, Trump relied on a rotation of senior administration officials, including Vice President J.D. Vance, to conduct press briefings. Levitt returned to the briefing room on July 16th. The tentative plan comes as Trump is in the early stages of deciding who should take over for Levitt in one of the White House's most visible roles, CNN reported Monday. Trump genuinely doesn't know who to pick and has expressed zero urgency on the matter, a senior White House official told CNN. Several names have been floated for the job in recent days, according to CNN, including Alina Habba, who briefly served as acting U.S. Attorney for New Jersey, and CNN commentator Scott Jennings, a former White House aide to President George W. Bush and outspoken Trump advocate. White House Principal Deputy Secretary Anna Kelly and former Homeland Security spokeswoman Trisha McLaughlin are also among roughly a dozen potential candidates, according to CNN. Trump allies have been jockeying to promote their preferred candidates to replace Levitt. Some hopefuls have already contacted junior White House staffers to ask them to put in a good word, a person familiar with those conversations told CNN. Others have pressed Trump directly on behalf of potential contenders, another person familiar with the matter told CNN, including advocates for Elizabeth Pipko, a former model and Republican National Committee spokesperson who was considered for press secretary during the presidential transition. but it remains unclear what qualifications Trump is seeking or whether he sees the need to fill the job. Levitt and other aides have frequently noted that Trump serves as his own spokesman through its Truth Social posts and his willingness to give brief interviews to reporters who call his personal cell phone. Some of those under consideration have concerns about the demands of the job, a source with knowledge of the private conversations told CNN. It's an insane job. It's a thankless job. And now they'll have to follow and be constantly compared to Caroline, the source said. Reuters poll. Trump hits record 33% low in approval. President Donald Trump's approval ratings fell to the lowest level of his presidency, with an overwhelming majority of Americans concerned the U.S. war with Iran will last a long time, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll that concluded on Monday. Just 33% of respondents in the four-day survey said they approved of Trump's performance in the White House, while 64% disapproved. Trump's approval rating, down from 35% in a poll that closed earlier this month and lower than at any point in his current term, has now tied the lowest level of his prior term, reached in December 2017. After returning to the White House in 2025 with just under half the country approving of his presidency, Trump's popularity this year took a hit after he ordered strikes on Iran alongside U.S. ally Israel. The ensuing conflict paralyzed a fifth of the global oil trade, triggering a surge in the price of gasoline that is weighing on U.S. households and on Trump's Republican allies defending congressional majorities in November midterm elections. Trump, who campaigned on promises to keep inflation in check and avoid long-lasting wars, initially pledged the conflict with Iran would take a few weeks. But Iran has proved resilient and has kept the oil trade through the Strait of Hormuz largely bottled up, even as the conflict has cooled. Some 80% of Americans, including 87% of Democrats and 71% of Republicans, think U.S. involvement in Iran will go on for an extended period of time, the Reuters Ipsos poll found. Just 16% said the conflict would likely end in a few weeks. Trump justifies high gas prices. Trump told a political rally in Garden City, New York on Friday that paying a tiny little bit more for your gasoline is worth the cost of ensuring a very evil country could not have a nuclear weapon, one of his stated rationales for the war. Throughout the conflict, the president has alternated between threats of escalation and assertions that a peace deal is imminent. Only one in five Americans, and just half of Republicans, think the war has been worth it, the latest Reuters Ipsos poll found. Concerns about the war and gasoline prices have Republicans nervous about their hopes of defending their slim majority in the U.S. House of Representatives in the November 3rd elections, and Democrats increasingly see the U.S. Senate also within their grasp. Reuters Ipsos polling this month has shown voters prefer Democrats over Republicans as better stewards of the economy for the first time in about a decade. The latest poll showed 38% of voters think Democrats will handle the economy better compared to 35% who prefer the Republican approach. Excuse me. Democrats are also seen as better equipped to manage the cost of living. The Republican approach to immigration has remained more popular than that of Democrats throughout Trump's term, with a sharp fall in border crossings and a sustained nationwide crackdown ordered by Trump. But Republicans are losing ground amid deadly confrontations and a surge in detainees, including children. Some 40% of registered voters said Republicans have the better approach on immigration policy, compared to 38% who picked Democrats, according to the latest Reuters Ipsos poll. That 2 percentage point spread is the lowest of Trump's term. Republicans led by 26 points in January 2025. The Reuters Ipsos poll, which was conducted online, gathered responses from 1,166 U.S. adults nationwide and had a margin of error of 3 percentage points in either direction. Trump says Kim has responded to his overtures. A day after he ordered the United States to scale back military exercises with South Korea and called North Korea unthreatening and respectful, President Donald Trump said on Monday that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un had responded to his outreach. Trump's relationship with Kim has received less White House emphasis than it did in his first term, when the two men met and exchanged letters. But the U.S. president has repeatedly signaled interest in reviving direct diplomacy with the North Korean leader. Asked by a reporter in the Oval Office why Kim had not responded to his efforts to reengage, Trump responded, "He has." He did not provide further details. White House officials and North Korea's mission to the United Nations in New York did not immediately respond when asked to comment. Trump on Sunday instructed the Pentagon to substantially reduce joint military exercises with long-term Asian ally South Korea, citing the cost of the drills and Seoul's refusal to take part in actions against Iran. North Korea denounces such drills as preparations for war. Kim and Trump's relationship was a dominant theme during Trump's first term. They held summits in 2018 and 2019 before negotiations broke down over Pyongyang's nuclear weapons arsenal. North Korea is under heavy international sanctions over those weapons, as well as its ballistic missiles. Last year, Kim's powerful sister, Kim Yo-jong, conceded that the personal relationship between her brother and Trump was not bad, but if Washington intended to use a personal relationship as a way to end Pyongyang's nuclear weapons program, the effort would only be the subject of mockery. Since Trump and Kim last met in 2019, North Korea has significantly strengthened ties with Russia while maintaining close relations with China. North Korean troops have fought alongside Russia in its invasion of Ukraine, and Kiev said last week that North Korean-made missiles were used in a Russian ballistic missile attack on a steel plant in Zaporizhzhia. Trump's administration has repeatedly criticized North Korea's military support for Russia in Ukraine, but on Monday the president said, "Kim Jong-un has always treated me with great respect. I understand him. He understands me," he said. On Tuesday in Pyongyang, while making no mention of Trump, North Korea's state news agency quoted Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov as saying in a message to North Korean Foreign Minister Cho Son-hui that North Korea and Russia are working to establish a new and righteous order. On Sunday, Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform that drills were not only costly, but send a signal that is totally inappropriate and hostile to a country that, as long as Donald J. Trump has been president, has been unthreatening and respectful. Analysts say that despite North Korea's coolness to Trump's overtures and the much stronger position Kim is in since their last summit, another meeting between the two was possible. Victor Cha, head of the Korean program at Washington Center for Strategic and International Studies think tank, doubted North Korea would respond immediately, however. "I think they're going to bide their time and wait a little bit," he said. Cha said part of Trump's motivation for raising North Korea again appeared to be to shift headlines away from his struggles with the Iran war, although he was clearly interested in seeing Kim again. Andrew Yeo at Washington's Brookings Institute said a meeting would be in Kim's interest. "Some say there's no reason why Kim Jong-un would want to meet Trump because he has Russia and China now in his pocket. But on the flip side, I feel like he has nothing to lose by meeting Trump because he has Russia and China in his pocket," he said. For Kim, it's really about reputation. It's about meeting with the U.S. president again, and so it's about reputation and status, Yeo said. It's just a matter of timing, and when's the most optimal timing for Kim Jong-un? Sidney Seeler, a former U.S. National Intelligence Officer for North Korea, said Trump's latest move was not unprecedented, recalling that he suspended the major Ulchi Freedom Guardian drills in 2018 to encourage dialogue with Kim. "Of course, it didn't gain us that much at the time, but I don't think that we lost much at that time either," he said. Trump Trump administration probing Florida socialist group. Socialist activists in Florida say the FBI has their group in its sights again, more than a decade after federal agents raided and surveilled its members. The Washington Examiner reported that agents questioned an Orlando, Florida activist about the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, or FRSO, on August 11th, according to Friday statements from the group and the Committee to Stop FBI Repression. FRSO has a previous history of violent activity and civil unrest intended to manipulate and influence the electoral process and public perceptions, particularly playing a role in disrupting Republican and Democratic national conventions, an FBI intelligence report said in 2020. Both organizations warned members against talking to agents and urged them to alert their networks if approached. FRSO has watched for law enforcement scrutiny since a terrorism probe led to home and office raids in 2010. The investigation into the group produced no indictments despite continued attention from multiple administrations. President Donald Trump is now alleged to be expanding investigations and prosecutions of leftist activists using undercover operatives and other methods. It's clear that this is part of a pattern of ongoing state repression that began in 2010, the Committee to Stop FBI Repression said. The group added that the FBI aims to infiltrate and dismantle movements like theirs and said the Trump administration has pushed that effort aggressively. The FBI's Tampa field office told the Examiner it could not confirm or deny any contact with the public or the existence of an investigation. FRSO and two other Florida FBI offices did not respond to requests for comment. The FBI in 2010 suspected FRSO had provided material support to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine and the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, both designated foreign terrorist organizations, according to court records. That case never led to charges after public backlash. The FBI kept referencing the group in later documents during Trump's first term and former President Joe Biden's presidency. The 2020 report also detailed FRSO's plan to protest the Republican National Convention in Jacksonville, Florida, an event Republicans ultimately canceled. FRSO's Friday statement instructed members to confirm only their identity, record agents' names, ask them to leave without a warrant, and alert others quickly. Political repression thrives on people feeling isolated and afraid, the organization said. FRSO was mentioned in June for reportedly being suspected of assisting in demonstrations against immigration enforcement activity in New Jersey. What organizers portrayed as a grassroots movement against U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, operations is increasingly being linked to a network of well-funded socialist communists and anti-ICE organizations within national reach. Groups include FRSO, the Democratic Socialists of America, the Revolutionary Communist Party USA, and Refuse Fascism are believed to have helped mobilize activists to protests outside a Newark ICE detention center. Judge blocks Trump's plan to keep FBI headquarters in Washington. A federal judge on Monday blocked the Trump administration from abandoning a planned new FBI headquarters in Maryland and relocating the Bureau's headquarters to a site in Washington, D.C. Reuters reported that the ruling prevents the administration from halting the long-running project to build a new FBI headquarters in Greenbelt, Maryland, a site that had been selected by the federal government in 2023. The ruling is the latest development in a years-long battle over where the FBI should establish a modern headquarters to replace the aging J. Edgar Hoover building on Pennsylvania Avenue in downtown Washington. The General Services Administration selected a 61-acre site in Greenbelt in November of 2023 after evaluating competing locations in Maryland and Virginia, saying the site offered the best overall combination of security, transportation access, and developmental potential. The planned Maryland campus was intended to consolidate FBI employees and operations now spread across multiple facilities while replacing the Bureau's aging headquarters, which has long been criticized for its deteriorating condition, outdated infrastructure, and security limitations. The effort has also fueled political disputes among Maryland, Virginia, and Washington over federal jobs, investment, and real estate. The Trump administration reversed course after President Donald Trump returned to office, with Trump saying in March 2025 that he wanted to keep the FBI headquarters in Washington rather than move it to Maryland. Trump argued that the Bureau should remain close to the Justice Department and other federal law enforcement agencies in the nation's capital. The administration subsequently selected the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center in downtown Washington as the FBI's future headquarters location instead of proceeding with the Greenbelt campus. The decision effectively scrapped years of planning and preparation for the Maryland project and prompted Maryland officials and Prince George's County to challenge the administration in court. Maryland Attorney General Anthony Brown and Prince George's County sued the Trump administration in November of 2025, arguing that federal officials had unlawfully diverted the headquarters project away from the site selected through the GSA's established process. The lawsuit placed the future of one of the federal government's largest planned construction projects at the center of a dispute over the administration's authority to reverse a site selection decision made under a prior administration. Monday's ruling represents a victory for Maryland and Prince George's County, which had argued that the federal government could not lawfully abandon the Greenbelt project. The ruling does not mean the FBI will immediately move into a new Maryland headquarters, and additional legal and administrative steps could still affect the project's ultimate timetable. The case also leaves unresolved what will happen to the administration's plan for the Ronald Reagan Building, which officials had selected as an alternative headquarters site in 2025. The Reagan Building is a prominent federal complex in downtown Washington, located near the National Mall, and the headquarters of several other federal agencies. The Trump administration had argued that keeping the FBI headquarters in Washington would make logistical and operational sense and would avoid the lengthy construction process associated with a new suburban campus. Trump has also criticized the idea of moving the Bureau to Maryland, at one point arguing that the planned Greenbelt location was too far from the center of Washington. Maryland officials, however, have argued that Greenbelt is part of the Washington metropolitan area and that the site was selected after an extensive federal evaluation process. The FBI headquarters controversy also carried significant economic and political stakes for Maryland because a new campus would bring thousands of federal employees and substantial construction and infrastructure investment to Prince George's County. The administration's decision to retain the headquarters in Washington instead shifted the debate from constructing a new purpose-built campus to renovating and repurposing an existing federal building. The legal fight is therefore about more than the location of FBI offices, with billions of dollars in federal construction and real estate decisions potentially affected by the court's ruling. The case also highlights the difficulty of reversing major federal construction decisions. The FBI has not yet provided a timetable for implementing the Maryland project following Monday's ruling, and the administration could appeal the decision. U.S. pauses border project in Texas National Park. President Donald Trump's administration said Monday it was pausing construction on a $1.7 billion border project at Big Bend National Park in Texas that has faced bipartisan opposition. The Department of Homeland Security plans to build vehicle barriers, patrol roads, lighting and detection technology across the park, known for its spectacular views and rich biodiversity, including hundreds of bird species, bobcats, and black bears. Bulldozers broke ground earlier this month on the public lands that blend desert, river, and mountain ecosystems and are home to the famed Santa Elena Canyon. Last night, I put a pause on all activity in that park, as far as construction goes, until I get down there and do a personal evaluation, Customs and Border Protection Commissioner Rodney Scott said in a short video posted on X, adding he would talk with local stakeholders and that more news would follow this week. The administration had waived dozens of environmental laws to greenlight the project, part of Trump's broader push to build an immense border wall with Mexico. Fierce opposition to the project has cut across party lines, including all four Texas border county judges who signed an open letter saying they supported border security but wanted more practical solutions. Five West Texas sheriffs likewise wrote to federal officials saying advanced surveillance technology would be better suited to stopping undocumented migration in the rugged terrain. Right now, there's a lot of construction that's going on in the Big Bend region. It's due in part to our current government that wants to build a border wall and install different facets of border protection, border security here in the region, Jake Knight, executive director of the Big Bend Protection Alliance, told AFP. But as you can see behind me, this is one of the most inhospitable places in the U.S., he said. It's quite literally impossible to traverse, whether on foot or in a vehicle, from the other side into this area. Furthermore, this is not the will of the people of this region. The Center for Biological Diversity has sued the government to block the project, alleging the waivers violated the Constitution. This is the most heinous attack on an American national park in generations, said Lakin Jordal, a national public lands advocate at the center. Supreme Court tells Trump no again on $5 million Carroll verdict. The Supreme Court on Monday again rebuffed President Donald Trump's push to throw out a jury's $5 million finding that he sexually abused the writer E. Jean Carroll at a New York City department store in the mid-1990s and later defamed her. The Republican president's lawyers had asked the justices to reconsider their refusal to hear his appeal. The court denied Trump's petition along with several others. It's unusual, although not unheard of, for the court to grant such requests. Trump paid the judgment shortly after the court declined to take up his appeal in June. Trump and the Justice Department are also asking the high court to toss out a second Carroll verdict totaling $83 million. They argue he's immune from being sued over comments he made about her in 2019 when he was president. The court has not yet acted on that appeal. Carroll is a longtime advice columnist and former TV talk show host. She testified at a 2023 trial that Trump turned a friendly 1990s encounter into a violent attack in the dressing room at Bergdorf Goodman, a luxury retailer across the street from Trump Tower in Manhattan. The jury found Trump liable for defaming Carroll when he denied her allegation in 2022. Trump has denied any wrongdoing. The Associated Press does not identify people who say they have been sexually assaulted unless they come forward publicly, as Carroll has done. Representative Donalds to Newsmax, affordability top concern for Florida voters ahead of primary, by Solange Rayner. Republican gubernatorial frontrunner Byron Donalds told Newsmax that affordability is the dominant issue for Florida voters, including within his own party, as the GOP congressman closes out his campaign ahead of Tuesday's primary. Donalds, the frontrunner in the Republican primary to succeed term-limited Governor Ron DeSantis, made the comments Monday on Bianca Across the Nation when asked what issues matter most to Florida Republicans and how a Donalds administration would differ from the current one. The issue that's on top of mind of Republicans and, quite frankly, all voters in Florida is affordability, he said. People want to make sure that they can continue to live in Florida, afford the Florida dream. Donalds said Florida's growth is a product of the state's political leadership. We are the number one destination for people from all across America because our state is led by common sense, conservative governance, he said. And as the next governor under my administration, that will not change. Asked what he'd do differently from DeSantis, Donald said his priority is building on the current administration's record rather than changing direction. It's not really about anything different from Governor DeSantis, he said. It's actually keeping the wins and the success that he's brought to Florida, but then taking Florida to a whole new level. On specific policy, Donalds pointed to the state's insurance market as an area needing further work. There's been good reforms by Governor DeSantis, but there's more work to do to reform the regulatory side, he said. Donalds also cited a property tax measure on the November ballot. We have to find ways to get people off of our tax rolls, he said, adding, the voters will decide on that one. Donald said he wants to lower the cost of building housing while protecting Florida's beauty and its agricultural lands. Donald, who has President Donald Trump's endorsement, has led Republican primary polling for months over rivals, including former State House Speaker Paul Renner. DeSantis has not endorsed a candidate in the race and has at times criticized Donald's, though the two have described their relationship as improving heading into the general election. DOJ plans 1,000 election monitors for midterms by Charlie McCarthy. The Justice Department plans to send approximately 1,000 election monitors to the polls for the midterms, according to Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Harmeet Dhillon. Appearing Monday on Bloomberg's Balance of Power, Dhillon said the deployment could mark a major expansion of the department's election monitoring efforts as the Trump administration focuses on election integrity and voter confidence. We will do it to the tune of approximately 1,000 election monitors in the November election, Dhillon said, noting the Civil Rights Division has sent personnel to election hotspots for decades to troubleshoot problems and increase confidence in the process. The DOJ routinely deploys monitors under both Republican and Democrat administrations to enforce federal voting laws and protect eligible voters. The department sent monitors to 86 jurisdictions during the 2024 presidential election and 64 during the 2022 midterms, according to the Washington Post. Dhillon said the administration has not finalized where monitors will be stationed. Potential targets include jurisdictions with language access or disability access issues as well as areas where officials suspect voter fraud. The DOJ already deployed monitors during this year's primaries, including in Detroit, Hamtramck, Lansing, and East Lansing, Michigan. The department said its Michigan operation was intended to ensure transparency, ballot security, and compliance with federal law. It also monitored polling places in three Arizona counties in July. Democrats have raised concerns about the expanded federal presence. A group of Democratic senators recently urged the DOJ to ensure monitors remain nonpartisan and do not interfere with state and local election administration. Dhillon, however, emphasized that election monitoring is a longstanding DOJ responsibility rather than something unique to the Trump administration. She also said the department is confronting disputes over voter rolls, alleging that some election officials have failed to remove ineligible registrations, including non-citizens. Dhillon said states cooperating with the DOJ have voter rolls containing hundreds of thousands of deceased people and tens of thousands of non-citizens, while stressing that officials must investigate further before accusing anyone of voting illegally. The goal is not so much going after one voter here or there, Dhillon said. It is increasing all American citizens' confidence in our elections. OpenAI launches ChatGPT for teens, promising a more age-appropriate chatbot. OpenAI is launching a version of ChatGPT designed for teenagers, the first generation to grow up with artificial intelligence, who are already using it for schoolwork, questions about daily life, and even companionship. The San Francisco-based company says ChatGPT for Teens, which launches Tuesday, is tailored for kids aged 13 to 17 with stronger protections, including content restrictions around things like suicide, self-harm, and romantic or sexual chats. It also provides homework and study support designed to help students learn rather than spit out answers in school essays. The idea is to guide teens towards healthy AI use in an age-appropriate environment, the company said. We want to treat teens like teens, which means that we have to make sure that we're showing up with the right developmental stage when we're not either talking down to them or treating them like kids, but we're also making sure that they're not exposed to material that they should not be exposed to, said Anne O'Leary, Vice President of Global Policy at OpenAI. Parents, educators, and child development experts have been sounding alarms over children's use of AI chatbots, which have been blamed for facilitating cheating on schoolwork and even suicide. And while even adults can fall victim to anthropomorphizing AI and developing unhealthy relationships with it, teenagers' brains are not yet fully developed, and they can be partially vulnerable. Last year, research from a watchdog group found that ChatGPT would tell 13-year-olds how to get drunk and high, instruct them on how to conceal eating disorders, and even compose a heartbreaking suicide to their parents if asked. In interactions with researchers posing as vulnerable teens, ChatGPT typically warned against risky activity, but went on to deliver startlingly detailed and personalized plans for drug use, calorie-restricted diets, or self-injury. In the U.S., more than 70% of teens are turning to AI chatbots for companionships, and half use AI companions regularly, according to a 2025 study from Common Sense Media, a group that studies and advocates for using digital media sensibly. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman has said that the company is trying to study emotional over-reliance on the technology, describing it last year as a really common thing with young people. Folks, that's all the time that we have left for today. On behalf of the Talking Information Center, this is Vicki. Thanks so very much for listening, and have a wonderful day.